record so far for the two longest scriptures. So it's so hard because the Bible is filled with great stories. And sometimes we just concentrate on a single verse or something like that. And when in fact, it's in the story, it's in all the elements of the story that the message is heard, not necessarily within one particular verse or another. About 25 months ago, I stood here in the end of the last Sunday in the month of May of 2017, and I preached a sermon to you all in which I was preaching as a candidate to become your new pastor. And some of you may remember from that sermon that I told the story of a homeless woman that had given birth to a child in my car by the name of Elaine. And if you can't remember that story, well, I'm going to tell it again, or something, parts of it. And part of the reason is I'm convinced that in our lives we only have about three or four stories, and what we basically do is we just retell those stories in different ways because they become the things that really help to define who we are and what we think. And this is one of those stories. Elaine was this person, homeless person, who I had gotten to know when I was a pastor over on the Kauai. She had been a person that had wandered into our church and had somehow adopted me as a person that she needed to spend a whole lot of time with. And over the years, I spent quite a bit of time with Elaine. In the mid-1990s, Elaine ended up pregnant for the fifth time. And she ended up delivering her fifth child in my car as I was rushing her to the hospital. Elaine, by this time, was in her mid-30s. What I had learned over the years of being with Elaine was bits and pieces of her story. And one of the realities that I learned about Elaine was that early on, as a teenager, was when she first began to become institutionalized. I don't know exactly what was at the root of that institutionalization, but what I do know that is in these institutions, most of whom were on the mainland, until she had made her way to Hawaii many years later. In these institutions, she was subjected to a variety of fairly inhumane treatment methodologies. And I also know that inside those institutions, she is also treated very inhumanely outside of the treatment opportunities. I know that at least once in her institutional life, which was institution out, institution out, institution out, at least once she was raped in the institution, probably by a staff member. I know that she was beaten. I know that she was in it, that her time in those institutions did not help to make her whole by any means whatsoever. Elaine, I don't know why she first went into an institution. I don't know if it was her family who put her there. I don't know if it was her school that put her there, if she had done something to break the law. I don't really know. That is a part of her story that never came out. But what became clear is that by being put into those institutions and the cycle that she went through, where they would take her in, treat her, sort of, release her to then have a place where she had no support system whatsoever, so she ultimately always ended up back on the streets, where she was forced to barter her body and do whatever else she needed to do to survive, that this cycle of in and out did not do anything to make her a more whole person. And as best as I can tell, the only reason that she ultimately was first institutionalized is because Elaine was of a limited mental capacity. She did not have the IQ that any of us have here in this room. She was a person who very much struggled with her mental abilities. And my sense is, it is that which set her apart from her community in many ways, and it is that which caused her to first be put into this cycle of in and out, in and out, in and out. And what I can tell you is, though the intentions may well have been right for putting her into a place that theoretically might help her, the truth of the matter is that no time in those institutions ever helped her to become a brighter person. At no time in those institutions did they ever help her to become less disfigured, because she was also very disfigured. And my sense is, from her story, is that she didn't enter in the first time disfigured. Instead, she became disfigured from the abuse that she either suffered there or on the streets. That none of that ever made her more whole. None of this made her more whole. And the thing is that what began to happen in her life was that for every time that she went in and came out, the madness that sort of had begun to define her by those on the outside began to consume herself as well. And what happened was a cycle that she was perceived as mad and insane and therefore was treated in that way, which only made her more mad and insane, which only made her be treated more and more. And the weird thing about all of this is she was the one who was always being blamed for whatever was happening. Though she was the one who had been separated from her community, she was the one that was being abandoned and left without any form of support whatsoever. Now, I tell you all this about Elaine because when I hear the scripture of the Gerasene demoniac, the way they talk about it in Luke 8, this person who is occupied by 6,000 demons, is that the cycle of that demoniac, the cycle of that person, seems eerily familiar to a person like Elaine and many other stories. What we hear is that he was forced to go live off in the tombs where the dead people hang out. Back in those times, the folks who were usually consigned to have to live in the tombs in the caves were people who had a disease like leprosy. So imagine you have a person who has leprosy, just like Elaine, who has limited mental abilities. The person with leprosy has no control over what has come into their life. And yet, because of that, is somehow perceived as an other that is dangerous and is therefore consigned to have to live away from the community, live away from where all the support is. And so now you have this person who has been sent out to live in the caves and in the tombs, his only companion being the skeletons and the bones and the spirits of the dead that have gone before him, forced to beg for his existence, having no way of being able to support himself, and understandably, he begins to rage. And the cycle begins, because as he rages, he is now seen as being possessed by a demon, as being insane. And therefore, since he is insane and raging, not only does he have leprosy, but he has all these other things, and so they try to chain him up. But the chains won't hold him. So then they chain him even more. Now they put his legs in leg irons, not just his arms. And the cycle goes over and repeats itself over and over and over. And what is happening is that the person who has been created as an other, has been separated from his community, is now being blamed for all the consequences of that reality, and is now being able to be seen as insane, needing to be chained up, needing to be set aside. I have to admit that as I worked on this sermon, it filled me with great sadness. Filled me with great sadness because, for one, it brought back to me the story of Elaine. And it is not a pleasant and fun story. And it brought back not only the story of Elaine, but it made me think about all the other people in our community and in our world that we are very good about separating them from that which might make them whole and pushing them out to the hinterlands where we don't have to deal with them. But when they do impinge upon our life, we then blame them for all the troubles that are there. I thought about all the people who have been othered that we know about. Just on Thursday, I came into work with Kirsten, picked up a Bicky downtown and rode it over here to Crossroads, and I was riding up Eisenberg Street. There was a man standing on the corner, yelling more obscenities than I've heard in a 10-second span in a very long time. Clearly angry, yelling at the world. Right nearby where there's a community of folks that have created a tent encampment on Eisenberg and Baratania at that park there. He was too big and too angry for a person like myself who did not know him, have any connection with him, to try and calm things down. So all I could do at that moment is to pray for him, to pray that something would happen soon that would allow him to calm himself down, because we all know what is next. We all know that if he continues in that anger and continues in that violence, that the police will be called and they will have no choice but to deal with them. And since he is clearly a person on the verge of violence, they will have no choice but to have themselves ready to have to react to such violence. And I think about him and stories like him that are lived out on our streets here in Honolulu every single day. And I think about the ways in which people are chained up, chained up by their own actions that are a response to the ways in which they are being treated. For that Gerasene demoniac, I got too exuberant with singing spirit this morning. And if anyone has a cough drop on them, I would love it. And so the Gerasene demoniac is chained up. For a person like Elaine, thank you, Mark. You are a blessed soul. Of course, you all are probably going, well, if he just doesn't have a cough drop, maybe he'll talk shorter. I could go on for hours now, Mark. Thank you. For a person like Elaine, the chains were much more subtle. On the day in which I brought her to the hospital with the baby having been delivered in my car, she did not get to see the baby. Before she even entered the hospital, the baby had been taken away from her. While she is in her hospital room and raging about wanting to see this child of hers, they were already saying to her, if you don't calm down, you'll never be able to see the baby. Which, of course, enraged her even more. And when she would calm down and have a moment of lucidity, and she is talking to the doctors and the therapists that are there, and very calmly said, if I don't get to see my child, this, remember, is number 5, the other 4 have already been taken away from her for one reason or another. If I don't get to see my child, I will kill myself. Very calmly saying this. Once she says that, she is now a danger to herself. So what happens? She's now sent into the psychiatric ward at Queen's Hospital, where she is surrounded by people who are raging. And then they give to her the conundrum that says, if you will calm down, maybe, if you will quit acting crazy, maybe you'll get to see your child. When, of course, it is not being able to see her child that is causing her to go crazy. These are the chains that we create for people who are somehow on the other side, on an other, in another way, somehow different than normal. So I think about that man screaming on the corner of Eisenberg and Baratania. I think about the young people that will be bullied for no reason of anything other than how they may look, how they may appear, how they may talk, or whatever else. And every time that they try to counter that bullying, they are only bullied more. I think about those LGBTQ youth who will be attempting or who will indeed commit suicide because they have been so othered by the community in which they are in. I think about those trans people that will be dead this year because somebody has killed them for who they are claiming to be. I think about the fact that our rates of incarceration in our world are dependent so much upon skin color, upon economic reality, all those things that are opportunities for us in a normative world to say, you are not normative, we put you over there. And then lo and behold, when people react about that, we say, see? See how we were right in doing that, and the cycle continues. And I must confess, it makes me so sad because I don't know what to do. I am just one person in a city of a million in which these stories are being told every single day. And I sat there this week as I went through story after story, and I said, what do I do? And then it occurred to me, well, the first thing you should do is read the scripture. Because this is only Act 1. It's only Act 1 that we have this raging demoniac out there in the cave being chained up and everything else. Because Act 2, Jesus enters into the picture. Act 2, God enters into the picture. Act 2, he is restored to wholeness. The biblical story that begins in Genesis and takes us all the way through to Revelation, in which God is attempting time and time again to help us restore to the wholeness in which we are created, happens right there in that story. There is never a time, I take from the story, there is never a time where God is not able to act through us, with us, to help to restore people to wholeness. And it is happening in our community every single day. In preparing for this sermon, I spent some time on the phone with our own Irene Willis Hassan, who just recently left Institute for Human Services as their chaplain. And we talked about this, and she said, my role as chaplain is to shine a light on folks so that they can see the beauty of who they truly are. Is to find the thing, find the service, the need, whatever it is that they need that will allow them to feel whole once again. Because if we are able to help a person to feel whole once again, then they are able to contribute again. And in her last week working at IHS, she's put aside all responsibilities and spent them basically on the street talking with her friends. People that you and I would shy away with from, for the most part, probably. And she was there sitting down, talking with them, doing whatever she could to shine a light on them. That is the same work that is happening that Jesus is doing in this story. On a wholly different way, some of you may have read about Daryl Davis this last week if you read the UCC devotional. Daryl Davis is an African-American man on the mainland who asked a question about folks who are in the Ku Klux Klan. He said, why do they hate me so much? And he said, in order to find out why they hate me so much, I decided to befriend them. He goes to their weddings. He posts their bail if they go to jail. He goes to their meetings and he hugs them. And you might think this man is truly insane, except for there are over 200 former Klan members who have been befriended by Daryl who left the Klan. Because he was willing to see them for the whole person that they had been created by God and to do whatever it was necessary to allow that wholeness to emerge. In our world all around us, our people who are doing the work of Jesus, who are called to that work. Now, lest you think, well, good, we'll let them do that work. I'll carry on with my own. Let us not forget that there are times that God, though it may not be our gift to do it all, there are times that God will call directly to us. A baby being born in my car is one of those moments. And for the next 48 hours at the hospital, I was with Elaine for most of those 48 hours, not because I thought that she would be a good parent. I knew that Elaine was capable of truly caring for a child. She did not have that ability. She would need support. But I knew that she deserved to be treated with dignity, that she deserved to be treated with grace, that she deserved to be treated as another human being. And for 48 hours, that was my task. That was my task in her life, was to be a person that would help her to be able to be treated as a human. Each of you has moments in your life. We may not have the call. Irene is particularly gifted at dealing with people who have trauma. It is not my gift. But there are moments when God says, I don't care if that's your gift. I'm calling you to this moment. And we best be open to those moments in our life so that we can be like Jesus in this story of that demoniac there on the shores of the lake and help to restore it to wholeness. And lastly, and perhaps most importantly, we do not do this alone. We do not do this work alone. We are not, in fact, called to doing this alone. When we had our lectionary group this last Tuesday, that was one of the points that came out as we were looking at these two scriptures, was that there's this very American need of rugged individualism to do it all on our own. I am not called to solve the issues of homelessness or whatever other issue you want to raise up by myself. I am called to a community, this community, the various communities that we belong to, and it is to a community that God calls to us. Jesus had an impact on the individual lives of each of his disciples, but he did not say, now go on your own way. He said, go together. Go into the world together to change the world. We are called in community, and God will provide. In the story of Elijah, one of my most favorite stories in the Bible, the verse is right after where Nancy finished reading. When Elijah has been told by God, get out of here. Get out of the cave. Go back to Damascus. And you know that Elijah is going, I don't want to. I don't want to do that. They're going to kill me. I don't want to be there. I can't do this on my own. In the very next verse, what we discover is there are 7,000 people waiting for Elijah. God is not calling us into this work by ourselves. God is calling us into a community. And of that 7,000, one of them was Elisha. Elisha was the person that Elijah would pass the mantle to, the mantle of prophecy to. Right there amongst them. Had he stayed in that cave, Elisha would never have been mentored by Elijah. Had he stayed in that cave, the 7,000 would still be waiting. God calls us together in the community. We saw that happen this very year. We know how good a community organizer Christy McPherson is with Faith Action. We know that she is a dynamo. We know that we can hardly imagine someone who is a more powerful force going up against folks that want to do things one way or another. But Christy McPherson, as good as she is not good enough by herself to get the legislature to take up legislation that they have denied for the last 5 years, and instead to take it up this year and pay attention to it. It was the fact that there were 50 other people at 9 different hearings, all wearing blue shirts that said Faith Action for Community Equity. It was the numbers of a community, some from here, other churches that were gathered together that made the point. We are not called into this work alone. We are called into this work together. And I can just tell you that 25 months ago when I was standing up here as a candidate for pastor, having not been a pastor of a church for 25 years in between, it wasn't just because I was doing other ministry, it was because I had begun to lose faith in the church. I had begun to lose faith in the fact that the church could be a force in our world. And the fact that I stood up here as a candidate said, you are restoring that faith for me. We have work to do. We have work to do. We are far from perfect. But I see amongst you who are the beloved community that I feel that I am called to every single day of my life, I see people that understand that we are called into a world where we are called to help bring wholeness back. It's not just about the Elaines of the world. It's not just about the person who was caught in the caves and the Gerasene. It's not about the bullied or anyone else. The entirety of God's creation, every facet of it, is impacted these days. And our task as individuals And as a beloved community, is to work together to create wholeness, to bring back, to restore, to work with God to restore wholeness. Amen.